My life provides the world an opportunity to see the future in real time, to view the confidence of a winner in a beautiful package. My smile emulates the sun in ways that makes those around me feel the warmth of my love. Joy creates the type of breeze that brings new direction to those that doubt spring is coming. The cooling blue skies that exist in my world are truly infectious. I hate the thought of slumber because it denies me too many moments when I'm not impacting the world. The passion I have for life cannot be contained by the dark clouds of my personal doubts. I have mastered my own negativity in a way that reduces any reduction in my productivity. Now every day is the net profit of my existence. My ball of life bounces off the foundation of obstacles, which were overcome with a smile. I now see the roadblocks as the items that give my reason for living value. My self-worth is discovered in the way that I enjoy bringing happiness to others. This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you 7 days a week, 6 p.m. Sunday through Friday, East Coast time, 3 p.m. West Coast time, Saturday at 8 p.m. East Coast time, and 5 p.m. West Coast time. This is a platform for your voice to be heard loud and clear. It is important that we participate in our world in a way that brings greatness to our existence. It is now time that we make sure that we no longer exist on the sideline, but are fully involved in the game that is going to determine our fate. I look forward to you calling in my show, 657-383-0309, so that your voice is heard without a filter.
USI never had it so good. 101.1 radio, the best R&B and hip hop music. The Quiet Storm every Friday and Saturday. Talk radio with the best host in the business. Sports talk radio every weekend night with Princess Cooper. Never had it so good radio now on 101.1, and it's 24/7, the world's best radio station.
This is James T. Deshaies, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. D, we are so happy to have you here. I have to tell you, the news focused on Louisiana and Mississippi. Did any of the tornadoes actually come down and hit in Atlanta?
No, I'm actually in southwest Georgia now. I'm about 3.5 hours from Atlanta. And the meteorologist explained last night that we did have circulating clouds, but it actually touched down this time about 45 miles south of us. And this is the third system to roll through here since New Year's Eve. We had one about 15 days ago, and it was a Category 3, and it ripped up the place really good. We had about 9 deaths here, and they had about 6 deaths in a neighboring county. A 2-year-old child still hasn't been found, and I just heard today that they're expecting another system to come through next week.
Yes, I have to tell you that I'm a strong believer in weather change. That's not what they call it. They don't call it weather change. They call it. But I really believe that the something is going on with our atmosphere that is creating a lot more deadly weather storms than we've ever had before. And, those people who are denying that we're having an impact on our atmosphere is just, I think they're just blind to what truly are the facts. Because it just seems like we're hotter and colder than we've ever been in my lifetime, I know. What is the science? I'm using the wrong terminology.
Climate change. Mm-hmm. And let me just point out that here in this area we've only had one day of cold weather. We haven't had any winter at all. It's almost springtime already. And this is all the way back, even in the fall months, the autumn months, it was quite warm, unseasonably warm. And I think, this region is really not known as Tornado Alley in no kind of way. Usually Jackson, Mississippi, and Mobile, Alabama will get frequent tornadoes at times. But I think what has happened is that since this time of year, with the Earth's axis tilted for this time of year, the circular system of tornadoes that would normally go through Jackson and Mobile, we're actually getting that traffic of bad weather right now. And so, when you speak about the political denial, the two sides, the one side in particular, denying that climate change is this, the administration that we have in office right now, he's quite convincing that, it's like a carnival crew that's holding down that office right now. It's all kind of stuff going on, even day after day, tweet after tweet, reply after reply, antagonism. It's almost comical, but not quite. Go ahead, Dane.
Yeah, it's just sad that we don't have the ability to come to an agreement on things that clearly can be proved. When you have the glaciers melting on both poles, and recognizing that the chances are that they won't come back, and you have places where they're suggesting after a number of years we'll be underwater, that our government needs to reach a conclusion and decide on a direction for there to be some meaningful dialogue on how to stop what is happening. But we seem to be always at odds. The same thing with that pipeline coming through. Looked like those decisions regarding that pipeline would have been made long before they got to the point where, now we're at this impassable point where the Indians and those who don't want it haven't reached any kind of agreement. Looked like those things would have been hashed out before the decision would have been made to build it. And now we find ourselves at this point, and looks like something tragic is going to happen before all of it is said and done, because the protesters are so committed to their cause. And so I don't think they're just going to just walk away and say, okay. So it'll be interesting to see how all this pans out.
It one has to almost wonder whatever the agenda is for this administration to have been elected in the first place. We all know that Dick Cheney was behind that Bush administration. They had things to do over in Iraq. And so whatever the agenda is, it must be pretty daggum important. And about the pipeline out west, I hope that doesn't turn into another Waco. And
I'm afraid that it very well may be, because these people are bound and determined they're not going away. You know, it's not, you know, it's something that they're very committed to, and now they got approval to go underneath the river. I'm not sure what river that is. Is it the Colorado River or some river that they've already got approval to go underneath? And so I look like they would have satisfied everybody's concern about the safety of doing whatever it is they're doing before they do it. But obviously, these people are not feeling what it is that they're suggesting they're going to do. And this administration is just not in tune into the people. You know, they're in tune into business, and they're going to go along and do what's in the best interest of business. So, therefore, they're not interested in whether or not these sacred grounds are destroyed or disrupted. And so we can look for the business to be given a pass to move on and do whatever it is they need to do in order to get done what they want to get done. We're going to take a short break, and I'll give everybody an opportunity to get online and get ready to have our discussion for today.
Thinking back in time when love was only in my mind, I realized ain't no second chance. You got to hold on to romance, don't let it slide. There's a special kind of magic in the air when you find another heart that needs to share.
No.
D, look like we'll be waiting for the ladies, but why don't we start our conversation by me just asking you, what do you think are the good qualities of a long-lasting and quality relationship?
Let me make sure I understand the question. Ask me the question again, James.
What do you think are the qualities of a long-lasting and good relationship? The traits or qualities.
Okay. It has to be almost strictly compassionate. A lot of empathy has to come into place. One would have to always put themselves in the other person's shoes. There wouldn't be any room for selfishness. And so I like to say that a lot of compromise has to be expected, preferably by both parties. I've come to realize recently that a marriage or even a relationship is like a business where somebody has to manage the relationship and somebody else, preferably, will have to be the leader on how to make things be the way they're supposed to be. So there has to be a lot of compromise to be given. In my own relationship, I have no problem in compromising because actually, in reality, I'm too tired to fight no more. So. I give in a lot, and you know they're just saying happy wife, happy life, and so you know like I said, I'm too tired to fight. This is my third marriage, and so you will hear that coming from an older guy like me. Now a younger man he's not gonna take that stance, and so that's where I stand with that.
Well, you know, I believe there is there has to be a overall stance that a man needs to take for him to be successful, no matter where he is in the age realm, because you don't want to get married and divorced, because I tell you that getting married and divorced, can put an extremely financial burden on a relationship or on a person's future. I believe that had I remained married the first time and found a way to get through the emotional issues that we had, I might be very well, or we may very well have been in a much better place financially. You know, because when you keep finding yourself starting over, it really put a damper on where you can reach in the financial realm. But let me just ask you this, too, as we get prepared and hopefully the ladies will pop on. What do you think God expects from us when he's told us that the woman is the weaker vessel? So do you believe when he says weaker vessel, he only means in the matter of strength, like physical? Is it just physical, or does it go beyond just the physical?
Well, James, you know, I would hope that times have not changed so much where that golden plan don't come into play anymore. I think what God meant when he laid out that format was for the man to be man enough and to have the characteristics so refined and defined to where it wouldn't be any question about his ability to lead. Dadgummit, in modern times, it seems as though that we have accepted so many different ideologies that I think the real characteristic of what a man is and what he's supposed to be has been lost in the shuffle. So in saying that, I think women get frustrated quickly when men, and I use that term loosely, when they still have tendencies to be immature, still have tendencies to be mama boys, and they don't mind showing in the idea of pimpology to want to have a woman take care of them. So, you know, I always say this is a culture that we pretty much created for ourselves, and so to answer that question honestly, I'm really not sure.
Well, you know, I think it's disastrous that we have a situation where I don't think a majority of men are that way, but I think there's a large enough number of men who are that way to bring it to the attention of everybody. You know, so there are a lot of young men who seek to not be the man. They want to be the man because they're stronger, but not because they are the protector and because they're the provider. They have no shame in the fact that they make less money than the women, or they're not out there trying to make things happen. I know for myself, my first wife was 13 years older than me, and I'm sure that had a lot to do with the fact that our relationship didn't survive long term, but I thought it would, and I thought that I was a much more mature man, and I knew I was a breadwinner because I worked two jobs, and I was willing to work two jobs, and I was willing to pay the majority of the bills. So even though my wife was older than me and had worked more years than me, I accepted my role as the person who paid the majority of the bills. And so I had no problem with her paying less of the bills and her hopefully saving more of the money. But that's, you know, that was okay with me. And so I took on my role as the provider and the protector, regardless of the fact that I was 13 years younger. And but I just think that men, you know, I look around to some of my friends, and a lot of my friends have picked up the mantle and did what they're supposed to do. And there are a lot of positive role models out there related to the young men that I know, but there are a few men that I know who do not do what they're supposed to related to taking care of their children and taking care of their woman and protecting their woman and doing what they should be doing. And we want everybody, we want that to be 100%. And if it's only 80%, that's still not enough, because that still means there's a large percentage of women who won't get a qualified man. And so when I think about the, you know, now we ask the women to do a lot more than they were asked to do years ago. But it has always been my desire for me to be the breadwinner, and I wanted a wife who wanted to work, not one that had to work. And so I have to tell you that despite the fact that both of my wives worked, there were times when they were laid off or unemployed that I had to carry everything myself, and I never dropped the ball. And I always felt good about that. You know, I felt good about that they could take a hiatus from the workforce and know that the bills were still going to get paid irregardless. But you are able to get way ahead financially if you have two people working for, you know, at working toward the same goal. How are you doing, Joyce, this evening? You're the first lady to come aboard today. How are you doing, Joyce?
Hi. How you doing? I apologize for being a little late today, but I've been trying to work on some issues that has been plugging me down for the last 4 years, and hopefully I can get some relief in the process of going to the Supreme Court. So I'm doing good today. Thank you.
Okay. Joyce, I wanted most of the ladies to come on, too. We had a good Dee came up with a good discussion, and we wanted to share it with the ladies and kind of get everybody's feedback. So I hope you're not the only one that is on today, even though you will be a good person to share the discussion with. But I also wanted to say that, you know, yesterday when I was talking about my Dr. Trump T-shirt, there were a number of people who felt like I was being rude and ugly toward Donald. Well, I wanted to find out how they feel about Nordstrom and some of these other companies who decided to drop Ivanka's wardrobe, and so they call it Dump the Trump, too. Did you see that?
Well, yeah, I've seen it, and they have a right to, because that's a political issue, and they're supposed to be serving all the people from non-denominations for, so I think they was right in doing that. I see that Mrs. Trump got a legal action out where she's trying to use being first lady as a way of suing to get more money and gain on her popularity, but according to a Good Morning America law firm, that's illegal also. But as far as your Dump the Trump shirt, that was not my slogan that I had said earlier. So that slogan is on you, but That was not my slogan. My slogan was my slogan was concerning Bill Clinton, that what they was talking about him. And at the time I said, I don't care what he did with his ding dong, as long as he kept the economy strong. That was my slogan.
Oh, okay.
Remember? But Dump the Trump is you know, that's your thing. But I would say peachable. You know, peachable. You know what I mean? That's what I would go more than Dump the Trump, you know, and it's more something that I think everybody would wear, because everybody, that's the goal, to get him impeached. So I would put impeachable more so than Dump the Trump, because we're going to dump him anyway. He's going to really dump himself. But anyway, as far as her logo is concerned and for her merchandise, I think that they capitalize in any way that they can on that. That bracelet that she was trying to promote, that was over $10,000. They're there to serve the more elite, and it's not for the common everyday people. So I'm glad that Nordstrom did make a move on that.
Yeah, I heard that Macy's, Nordstrom's, J. Max, or, you know, I don't know all those companies, but a number of them are looking at pulling her wardrobe not carrying it for whatever reason. He suggested that profit shouldn't be the only reason that they continue to carry it. It's a name brand, and it has a following. So it's interesting how he drops things when they're not profitable, but he wants these companies to keep carrying them, whether or not they're making money or not.
Well, they're sending a message, too, that they don't agree with their platform. I think that's what these stores are sending a message, that he's so far to the extreme to the left that they're not going to be committed into that. They don't want no parts of that. So they don't like anything about his platform, because his platform is not for the people and other people. It's for self-preservation, and that's what that's all about.
All right, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to come back. And because we do have one of the ladies of the Fantastic Four on, we're going to carry on the topic that Dee had brought up. And I think it's a very valid topic, and we're going to discuss it when we return from the break.
Thank you. that would make the woman a weaker vessel as compared to the man. When it's time to stand alone, the woman will shore up her strength and will not be a weak vessel. But as compared to a man, because the man is supposed to be strong, then yes, I will yield to the man, and I will say that I am the weaker vessel because I want my man to be strong.
So does that mean both physically and emotionally strong?
I want my man to be physically strong, emotionally strong. I want him to hold me up when I'm feeling down emotionally. I want him to be able to do it, not that he has to do it on a regular basis, but when the need is there for it to occur, then he's able to do that. He's able to hold me up.
All right, Joyce, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think that the Bible itself positioned you automatically as to the woman being a weaker vessel by him making Adam first and Eve second. That would along to let you know where protocol stands, where it stands in the Bible, and where God meant for it to stand in our day-to-day living. He have always been that the woman should be subservient to the man throughout the Bible. I agree with Gina. You definitely would want your man to carry the lead and carry the torch. You look up on him for direction, for that support and the strength. And her vessel is the weaker one of the male. So that's how I look at that. And you know, why does it have to be in certain areas? But that's just where it stands. You know, that's where the Bible is meant for it to be, that the man should be there. And then of Adam, and then there you got Eve, which means there's the man, and there's the woman that support.
And do you well, I'll tell you what, Dee, why don't you give me the topic that you we spoke about? Why don't you kind of take the lead on that and kind of ask the topic or make the statement? Because you gave it to me, so it'll be given in the fashion you want it to be given.
Okay, I think we're pretty much on point. Good evening, ladies. Nice to be with y'all today. I think we're pretty much on point. Both ladies gave their interpretations of what the Lord meant when He said that. Regina expound on it in a more of a in the way that I had intended the question to be asked, and that is the man also understanding his role of being the stronger vessel. It's one thing to have that being said by our Lord, but it's another thing for the man hearing it and understanding what his role is, being a man. And so what brought me to the question in the first place, or the topic in the first place, my second marriage of 19 years ended somewhat in unfavorable conditions. My wife of that marriage, she was the same age as myself, and I'll be 61 my next birthday. And she went through a period of time that I was ill-informed about and did not understand. She went through her time of menopause, and she exclaimed to me, or explained to me one day, that she wasn't feeling sexual and did not have the desires to be intimate in that way any longer. Well, me being ignorant to the condition, or if I can call it that, at that time, I felt insulted. And I felt that I was still sexually active. And so as our time went on together, she would have mood swings and her, if she had sensed that I might be trying to play up to an intimate relationship later on that night, her demeanor would be somewhat short. And so she, in my eyes, she wasn't very romantic. So as it turned out, I started to cheat on her, and I found romance elsewhere. But my current wife is 20 years younger than myself, and she just turned 40. So she's experiencing some of the mood swings, the sweat and the irritability and the emotional imbalance that go along with said condition. It has been my quest to be a better understanding of my wife and partner. I feel that I probably let my past wife down, not being the vessel of understanding that I should have been, being a man. Now, I got to tell you that, you know, I am a new advocate of men, and I wish that some of the other male callers would at least let us know that you're out there, because there is a huge divide on what a man's supposed to be. And so now where I am, I'm better understanding, and she need not apologize for her going through these things. I am actually there for her. You know, it gets a little uncomfortable at times, but, you know, like Regina said, you know, you have to be able to understand where you're supposed to be able to understand. And, you know, so that's where I am, and that's what made me bring that subject up.
And not to mention, too, that eventually men go through menopause as well, so there are some issues that you're going to be addressing that she's going to have to be considerate of also. So that's where that communication comes in and the feeling. So, you know, you got to take that into consideration because they do go through changes also.
Mm-hmm. And I have. And let me elaborate on that really quick. You know, being my age, what I am, I start to experience that, shoot, I guess at 40, 45 also. And men have this thing where they have, we call the 40-year itch, where we want to prove to ourselves more than anybody that we still got it. And that's when we start going out and doing crazy, lavish things, buying boy toys and trying to pick up women that is going to kind of blow up in our face. And so I kind of explained to my wife when we were dating that, you know, my age is not where it's a lot younger than you, a lot older than you, and you may experience some difficulties at times. But she's been very understanding in that way. And I couldn't be more happier with her attitude about that.
Well, that's when you know you got a good partner.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, one of the things that both partners need to do is evolve from the athletics to the extended enjoyment of intimacy. You know, when you're in your 20s, 19 teens, and early years, you may get all caught up in the athletics of intimacy. But as you get older, there is a intimacy that you can go into that is even more extended when you want to just please your mate by giving them a nice massage or giving them a hot oil or, you know, running their hot bath or doing things that are a lot more thoughtful. If your wife come in and says her feet are tired from a long day, then you need to rub her feet, till she falls asleep and just go to sleep, you know, and that may have been what she needed. And so, you know, there are so many things that people can give each other beyond what the norm is, and the sensitivity about what people are going through. You know, somebody may just want to have to watch a nice movie and have your wife fall asleep in your arms as y'all watch a nice movie. And take her, if you can still do it, lift her up and take her to her to the bed and put her in bed and cover her up, you know, or leave a candy on a pillow or a card on a pillow. I mean, there's so many things we can get into to tap in the emotional needs of a woman and have her tap into the emotional needs of a man. I love receiving flowers, too. If there's something special going on in my life, I would like to think my wife was not beyond sending me a gift at work so people could ooh and ah and tell me how special I must be. You know, I think that goes both ways, and people need to address those kinds of things. Regina?
I'm here. I'm listening. I'm listening, and what I'm thinking is, it is very sad that it takes, I think what's missing in the world is that I think people that somebody said to me, you know, the men gathering, the women gathering on the front porch, and the men gathering around the tree in the backyard, giving wisdom to the young men, because if the wisdom were passed down, and the younger men and the younger women heeded that wisdom, then we have far less divorces. People would hang on to their relationships quicker, more. And that, I think, really think that that is what's missing in our society, or, you know, in our culture. We don't have enough of that. And I say that because of things, you know, I wasn't taught to hold on and to be strong and do this and do that. I was taught to work, hold my own, be able to have my own money, and take care of myself. And that did not lend my heart to saying, okay, yes, I want to be like that, but I also want to share what I have. As a result, I'm very intolerant of foolishness, whereas sometimes foolishness is not foolishness but immaturity.
Well, you know something, you know, I always try to go on record and saying things and being honest with people. You know, somebody said to me, I think it was you, Regina, said, James, you just scared, you don't want somebody to come in there and take that money you got and take advantage of you. And that's what you know, you don't want them to take that money from your daughter or any of that. But let me just share this with you. And sometimes you just need to share, you know, I ain't gonna get real deep, but I'm gonna get deep enough that you can have an understanding. I want to fall in love with someone and be willing or able to trust somebody. And twice during the time, the two times I got married, I was more than willing to pay all the bills in the house. I worked hard enough, I worked long enough, and I didn't mind being the breadwinner. But I just met two people who did not have the foresight or the ability to let me be the kind of man that I was and be supportive of the man that I was. Because if the two women I had married would have said, okay, James, we're going to let you pay all these bills, and we're going to support you in that, and we're going to let you pay all the bills, and we're going to save all our money and let you do that, and then in the end, we would have been both victorious. So because neither of them allowed me to do that, in fact, one of them said, listen, why don't we save your whole paycheck? I actually asked her that one time. I said, why don't we save your whole paycheck? I was living in this house before you came. Let's just save your whole paycheck for a year. And she said, why? Why would we do that? And I'm sitting there saying, because we would be so far ahead of the game if we had saved her $40,000 that year and $20,000 the next year and $15,000 the next year. How far ahead of the game would we have been if we had learned to live off my salary only? You know, but I couldn't get them to see that. So now that I have cashed my chips in, I wish I would run into a lady and say, well, James, you know, you ain't got many expenses, so why don't we live off my money and we just keep your money building money? You got that big old stash, and the people tell me if I don't touch it for 10 years, it'll turn into nearly $1 million. Now, why wouldn't a woman be willing to make that kind of investment? Huh?
James, if I'm...
I'm listening. Now I'm being real.
Okay.
I want somebody to be real with me.
I got right, something dude. I want to say real quick about that. I think you hit on it when you said them not having the foresight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Regina hit on it when she spoke about the elder women, as well as the men, being mindful enough to let the younger people know that this is how it's supposed to be done, and if you did it this way, then you will have a long-lasting future together as a family. Now, we can look at other cultures and other races, and we can almost guarantee that they do that. And so that is just a habit that we have not adapted to yet. You know, when I use that word adaptation, it's almost like evolution. We have not evolved well enough to where we can even think in that mindset as a people. And so as harsh as that sound, I think there's some reality to that. When I came into this marriage, my wife had a husband that didn't know how to stay out of jail. And so she was like Regina. She was used to doing things herself. Well, when I came into her life, and me being the working bee that I am currently and shall continue to be, I thought that I was going to be more like you, James, and be able to take over and be the provider and protector and all that sort of thing. Well, as I spoke to you in my opening statement, you know, somebody has to be a manager. And somebody have to be what they are good at. So she was comfortable being the manager. And that's where we are. She managed the bills. She managed the calendar. And I do the labor, if you will, and I bring the check home. And now at this age in my life, I'm very comfortable about passing the check over. And she takes it and do whatever it needs to be done. The kids are well taken care of. And so, but I had to learn that. You can't tell me I would have done that as a younger man. Young black men, just don't think about giving the wife the check. They want to have something for themselves, or they want to check the wife to have their own bank account or whatever. But it's a learned behavior. So I just want to say something about that. Thank you.
And I want to just share with you all I have a close relative of mine, and I just take my hat off to he and his wife. In their late 50s, they bought the home of their dream. They still have the home that they've spent most of their life in that they're renting out. But because of their hard work and commitment together, they just purchased the home of their dream as a couple, and they built a nice house that they're going to live in for the rest of their existence. But to me, that's what you get from longevity and doing the things the right way. I've learned from my mom. I got two vehicles out there, Expedition and a Sequoia, and I'm getting ready to pay off my Sequoia. But I could care less if I buy another vehicle or not. You know, some people, when they got that lump sum, they would have put them a Cadillac out there in the yard, or, you know, bought a brand new, you know, fancy watch. I'm not into those things. You know, so that's why when I say, if I met a well-to-do woman who would say, well, hey, look, you know, let's just let your money ride, and you live off this money, and we'll have us $1 million in 10 years, and we can go anywhere we want to go. You know, and but some people, you know, hey, Joyce and Regina, I have to tell you this little game I play sometimes. I've asked people, well, can I be your maid? Can I move to your place and be your maid? And, you get a lady, I don't need no maid. But see, if you had a maid who had a bank account and was willing to share it with you 10 years down the road, you might need to think about letting that man be that maid. You know, but they don't see it that way. And what are your thoughts, Joyce?
Well, I think we live in our young people growing up, too, is like Regina said, they need that direction and they need that discipline and teaching, and you learn by looking, too. But our society, our young people, is a materialistic society, and you got to get off of that. They don't see, they don't look for tomorrow. They don't see the big picture. Now, I guess everybody can remember when everybody was selling homes and the whole bit, the economy was so good and all my neighbors was moving and the whole bit, and my husband told me no. He said that our house is going to function off of one income. So when the boom did come, you know, we maintained, we'd never been in a struggle the whole bit. So we always operated on that one income function, our household. And then the rest of it, like you say, you bank it. So now you're very comfortable in the long run, but you got to look at the big picture. I think what we've done and how we've done that, we've turned that over, and we taught our kids that way because our son is very realistic, and so my oldest son too. And I was surprised at him because he was in NFL. But he was very conservative. He saved his money. You know what I mean? He did not go. He wasn't flamboyant. His lifestyle was very, very conservative. Now, my youngest son, he's a doctor, and he the same way. They don't go, you know, they don't have big. They're not materialistic like that. You know, they live good, but they definitely put away for that rainy day. And I think that's in all in how we was raised. I came from a family, and Andre will tell you that it was nine of us, nine kids. Six girls and three boys, but we always saw my dad come home and bring that paycheck to my mom to run the household. Then every Friday they would go to Winn-Dixie Food Store to do the groceries and the whole bit. So it's all in learning and teaching. So we have to teach it to our generation because they don't know it. You only just learn by experimenting, you know what I mean, what they think is right. But if we dare teaching them and showing them the right way, and like Regina and said that we have to teach them how to do things and how to go about it. And this way we can be successful in that area.
And, you know, not only do you have to lead by example, but you also have to be willing enough to share your mistakes and, you know, share what would have happened or what could have happened if you had done this or done that.
That's right.
You have to to be willing to be open and be honest. I know within my lifetime, the one lesson that I've learned that that I've been able to carry. Now, while my parents stuck it out through thick and thin, my I saw my step parents, my mom and my stepdad do it, and my mom and my stepdad and my father and my stepmother saw them, you know, they stuck it out. Unfortunately, my mother did not, my mother and father did not stick it out. So, you know, there were some real issues there with me growing up. But the one lesson that I learned, and it was shown by example or told by example, was from an older lady who told me, when you are thinking about marrying someone, think, if this person goes off to war and comes back in a wheelchair with no arms and no legs, would you, are you in love enough with that person to, are you in love enough with that person to take care of that person even with these infirmities?
Amen.
And if you can say yes, then that is the person that you should be with. But if you can't say yes, then you don't need to be with that person, and it's just more or less luck. And that is the one lesson that I remember being taught by an older person that I felt, and had I been taught other lessons, because she had a successful marriage. I'm sure it wasn't a perfect marriage. I know it wasn't perfect, but they stuck it out. And right now she's 92 years old. Had I been told more, then maybe I would have, maybe I wouldn't be single now. You know, maybe I would be in a decent, loving relationship.
Not
well,
necessarily.
What I believe is that men should be, when we talk about men supporting women emotionally and making sure that they were being protectors, it goes that men and women should look to keep each other from going through any catastrophe. I think if you live through the way God intended us to live, you know, paying the 10% to Him, learning to live off maybe 70% and saving the 20%, you know, it really isn't that hard in America to be a millionaire. You can be a millionaire in America if you're willing to sacrifice some of those, all those things that so many people find themselves wanting and that destroys their finances, because they, you know, they're spending so much early on that they're not making the needed sacrifices. And so, you know, when you look at it long term, when you start in your 20s, there are fewer sacrifices you have to make in your 20s to make life what it needs to be when you retire than there is the sacrifices you have to make. You have to make big sacrifices when you wait to get in your 40s and your 50s to get ready for retirement. But that's what love is. You know, love is willing, meaning that you're willing to do what all you can to make life better for the two of you. And sometimes people go into marriage and relationships only thinking about what they can get out of it and not what can be built by the union. And there's so much more that can be built by the union when you stop thinking about yourself and thinking about the needs and desires of one another. And George, I am so pleased and happy that you have created the kind of young man that you created who can be the examples to the rest of young people, you know, who want to go out and spend every dime they have on all kind of jewelry and all kind of gold and all kind of fancy cars, instead of looking at the long run. And I just thank God that he gave me the longevity to work the 30-plus years that I worked, and to be in, I'm not in the greatest position, but I'm in a good position.
Right on. That's great. The way I was raised, it just meant a lot. Remember, when we was raised, my dad had always said, pay yourself first. You go out there, you work hard, you pay yourself first. You know, you put it away. You know, don't go out there and spend every dime you make. You know what I mean? And don't try to keep up with the Joneses, this and this and that, you know, because you got to see the bigger picture down the road. You know, you got to put away for a rainy day. That was his key, you know. He was just a simple laborer, you know, but his efforts as to what we looked at and what we saw and how we just came about, you know, it was just something, you know. And I'm proud of my oldest son because he lived mostly with his dad, but he saw things that he knew that he didn't want to throw things away and was more conservative. So I was very proud of the way that he has turned out now and the way that he looked that he wasn't into material things. He knew that he was in the NFL for a short period of time. NFL means not for long. That's what his slogan was always to him, not for long. So you know you're not there, but he was there to be vested. So, you know, it's all in what you look at. And now he has another career. So it's just how you was raised, that thing. But it's learning, talking, and like Regina said, telling what if, what are the consequences if you do certain things and you spend too fast and you do this, you know, and you're not putting away in a whole bit. So you got to tell a person what those consequences. And I was a good listener, you know. I always took advice from older elderly because I didn't want to bump my head. So quite naturally, whatever they had to say, I was willing to listen. So I'm from the old school. I want to hear it first. I want you to go through it so I won't have to. So it's all in teaching.
All right, we are 20 minutes before the show is going to end, so we're going to take another short break and we'll come back and finish out the show.
You never
This is James T. Deshay, the host of Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, brought to you by Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network. You know, perfection is a reachable place, and it's the kind of target that we all need to strive for. And every day, we can practice how do we get to perfection. And that should be our goal. And that should be the goal of everyone that is in my voice. We are fully aware that there is a right and there is a wrong. And we know the direction that right exists in. But we have to be determined and dedicated to work toward perfection. And so we want to reach perfection in our marriages. We want to reach perfection in our connections. We don't want to reach perfection in our finances. We want to reach perfection in the way we interact with other people. And so we have to decide that perfection is our goal and live our life as though we are reaching our goal is a worthy one. So, Dee, how important do you think it is to live every day as though you want to reach perfection?
Well, I like the word. I like the word perfection. I like the word. And let me give it to you. Let me give it to you the way I see it. And I want to put it in the way of a game. If you notice, if I can bring this up, and there is some comparison. The Super Bowl Sunday, when you had the Atlanta Falcons and you had Tom Brady and the New England Patriots, the Falcons were so elated that they had jumped on them so hard that they didn't know how to close the deal.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't give enough forethought on how to close the deal. And with the attitude that the Patriots have, and Tom Brady and Bill Belichick and the organization, they have a attitude of perfection. And so Tom didn't lose his head. Like you asked me the other day, what kind of was I more of a fighter? What kind of man am I? Am I a fighter? And I explained to you, no, I'm more of a cut man. Where when I see my fight in there and he's doing good or he's doing bad or he might be slacking somewhere, I would tell him, calm down, buddy. You're going to be all right. You just hang in there and your time is going to come. And that's what Tom Brady did. He just hung in there. He didn't get rattled. He didn't get emotionally distressed. He just took his time. And with perfection, he was able to make those little short throws until he got his team back into the game. Until he was able to close the deal and send everybody home crying. But perfection, you know, that's how I live my life. I try, you know, I'm not perfect. I had an imperfect past. I've had a past where I wasted a lot of time, and I wasted a lot of money, and neither of those I can get back. So I don't worry about that. What I do now is go forward, taking it one day at a time, and work toward perfection. And if I'm not able to get there where I would like to be in my lifetime, like Joyce, I have kids and offsprings where I'm able to relate to them and talk to them and not be so quick to chastise them. I got to use the art form of a conversation to where I can talk to them and so where they can better relate and be able to move forward and let them continue the legacy that I want my clan to have. Thanks.
Regina, what are your final thoughts about working toward perfection?
Well, I guess you can always, what is it, shoot for the moon and you may land among the stars, and that's really, you know, all I can say. I'm not going to stress myself out trying to work towards perfection but every day I'm going to work toward being a better person than I was the day before. There was only one perfect person who walked the earth, and I am in no way to be compared to him. But I can strive to live a life that would be pleasing to him.
Mm-hmm.
And Joyce, your final word for tonight?
I agree with you 100%. And never give up. Never give up. And I'm coming from Mississippi, and our goal and what our dad had always taught us, whatever you do, try to be your best at it. And if you give it your best, he's satisfied with that. But once he always told us, too, that we always had to be better than the white people. Always. That's what the mentality. That's what we was raised up. In my mind, I had to be good at what I do. Because they can get skated through. They easy really. They know somebody, the easy way out, they can lie their way out of it, whatever. But we better be good at what we do. And he always said, if you're gonna be a trash man or a garbage man, you be the best at it. You be the good at what it is. And once you give your best, you can be proud of yourself. And that's what I was raised up with, that mentality.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I just want to piggyback off what Joyce just said, and you know, my daddy used to always say, you know, and not to be racially inclined, but my daddy used to always make it clear, you can't do what the white folk do.
That's right.
And try to get away with it. That's right.
That's
so,
right.
And knowing that, that has kept me on the straight and narrow. If I got close to burning my candles at both ends, I had the resources of my past to extinguish one of them ends and not to burn it so fast. So that's how I stand here before you today. But I just wanted to throw that in there. Thanks.
Well, you know, we have to be prepared to extend the legacy beyond those of our past. And if every one of us look to extend the legacy beyond, you know, those of the past, then we'll be making a difference. I know I look back at my grandfather who has a 100-acre farm and his house is still providing shelter for us when we go to South Carolina. If I'm able to do the same, I'll make a difference in the lives of those who come behind me. And that's why it's so important for me not to lose the fact that I have positioned myself in a good place, but I need to continue to move forward to make it an even better place. Because if you stop moving forward, then you'll find yourself going backwards. And so in my effort to continue to try to reach perfection, do the best thing, live up to my dreams, and just have an existence that at the end will have meaning not only to myself but to those who I love and those who I don't even know, that my life would have had value. And that's what all of our lives need to do, is have value. And that's what we need to be working. That's the kind of perfection that we need to be working toward, is our lives having value.
That's heavy.
And that's what I want to encourage us to do, and to have value not only in ourselves and our children, but into those people we don't even know. And that's who we're reaching when we have these discussions on the radio. We're talking to people who we don't even know and sharing some of our thoughts beyond ourselves, and tell them that they can make it and make it even further than we've made it, and that provisions are being made, but we have to be smarter. We have to be smarter, and we have to play within the rules so that we don't find ourselves behind, permanently behind the eight ball. You can get behind the eight ball, but you got to fight your way in front of it
and then fight your way into the game so that you can become a winner and make a difference. And again, as always, I want to go ahead, D.
I'm sorry. I just want to close by reading a quote that my 4 or 5 year old gave me that he's to recite during Black History Month. And it says, every great dream begins with a dreamer. Always remember that you have within you the strength, the patience, and the passion to reach for the stars and to change the world. And that was a quote by Harriet Tubman.
All right. Well, we're going to close on that tonight. I don't think I can do it any better. And we'll see you guys tomorrow at 6 p.m. on Thursday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 3 o'clock Western Time. We want to be here together on Thoughts, Love, and Reflection, where we talk about the things that have value and meaning today and in the future. See you guys tomorrow.
Drumming my pain with his fingers, singing my life with his words.